would like to inform all parties today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
I'd love to be able to disconnect. That would be fantastic. But I'm not allowed to. It's Liz Williams speaking. If you could identify yourselves for the recording, that would be helpful because I use the transcript to do the work behind the scenes. If it's okay with everyone, perhaps I can just go back a step, particularly for Victoria's benefit, because she's very kindly stepped in for the NCUC's guys because they are short of people and Robin is on a plane, just to set out what we're intending to do for today's call, if that's all right.
Please do.
Yep. Victoria, I sent you this morning the 9th of July email that I had sent around to the group so that you could get a flavour for what Recommendation 20 is trying to do. The current drafting of the recommendation says an application will be rejected if it is determined, based upon public comments or otherwise, that there is substantial opposition to it from among significant established institutions of the economic sector or cultural or language community to which it is targeted or which is intended to support. At last week's conference call on Friday, there was general support from the majority of constituencies except the NCUC that that language would be helpful to frame an objection process for us to deal with essentially sponsored top-level domains where there would be objections to the objections to the string. One of the issues that we've had, and Karen can speak more in detail about this from the implementation team, is that the language as it's currently drafted is very subjective, has some subjective elements to it, most notably substantial opposition, what is substantial, significant and established institutions, what is significant and what's established, and then the measurement of to which it is targeted or which is intended to support. Philip Shepherd, who's not on the call, and J. Scott Evans have come back in the email correspondence which has gone on since the Friday call to express support for the recommendation as it's drafted. And Philip's particular recommendation was that we did some significant work on the implementation of it, which would include some expanded definitions to facilitate with the subjectivity of the language as it's currently drafted. Avery sent some suggestions on three specific terms. The first one is substantial opposition, the second one is established institution, and the third one is formal existence. And he's provided some definitions that, given the lack of comments about those three definitions, I think people generally accept that what she's suggested in an implementation framework would be useful. There's a missing element here, which is the usefulness of public comments within the application round and the use to which public comments would be put in an evaluation of an application. So that just gives some general background. I wanted to just open it up to whomever to either raise issues or ask questions or give a different take on what I've just said. So just go right ahead.
Well, Victoria, you're kind of jumping in fresh on this, so do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Chuck. And thanks, Liz, also for that background. It's very helpful. And I guess that my first question is, just so that I have the overview, I have read the material that you sent me this morning, but I haven't read, of course, all the threads going back, and I haven't listened to the other, earlier calls. My first question really is just to build on what you said. I'm looking now at the implementation guidelines as they currently stand, and it looks to me, and just perhaps you can correct me if I've got this wrong, but it looks as though the relevant implementation guidelines would be IGF and IGH. So we've got external dispute providers under H on complaints. I don't know if that's falls within this recommendation, and under F, we've got procedure dealing with contention for strings with a final decision by the board using advice from staff and expert panels. Are those the two relevant two relevant implementation guidelines?
Yes.
And how do they relate to each other?
They're two separate things. One is that disputes would not, and Karen jump in here because Karen's for the implementation team person. The dispute resolution process, which includes the handling of contention, which is an objection-based process, would be handled by an independent panel of evaluators. it would not be handled at a staff level.
Mm-hmm.
So that process would be set out prior to the opening of the application round, understood by all applicants, and clearly set out criteria for evaluators to make judgments on either a dispute or an objection. And a lot of work has been done, Victoria, on establishment of the objection evaluation process to establish standing, to establish institution, to establish whether someone can pay a fee, to establish whether they're just generally unhappy about life, world, the universe and everything, or they have a specific objection they wish to lodge on specific criteria.
Okay.
So those two implementation guidelines are general, and a lot of work has been done on the detail of them, particularly with respect to objection resolution.
Okay. So would it be correct to say that the contention scenario, I haven't read all those, I would need to have a look at the more detailed follow-through to get a better grip of it, but would it be correct to say that our 1GF is, when it says contention, is that where there are two applicants seeking the same string?
Yes.
And our disputes are the objections under 20?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you, just so I'm clear about that.
Now, disputes, Victoria, would all, there's a few other recommendations where the dispute process may come into play too, but our focus in this group is on 20.
Right. Yeah. Oh, but 20 is a dispute. I mean, they dispute.
20 is an objection.
It's an objection.
Yeah. Three and six are two other examples of objections. I think that the committee has.
Excuse me, J. Scott Evans joins.
Has pretty much come to agreement six just a few minutes ago, apparently, or at least the subcommittee has, and they'll put it to the full committee on Friday.
So, okay, well then IGF deals with contention and IGH deals with complaints, and so where is objections in the implementation?
Well, recommendation 20, the way it's worded now, someone could file an objection to the string if it's a string that is targeted for a particular community if there's substantial opposition from that community that's targeted, then they could file an objection. It's up to the independent expert panel to make a decision on whether that objection is valid or not.
Okay, and final appeal?
Well, the appeal process is something different, right, Liz? I mean,
yes, it is. And Karen, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. Part of the other element of the work that Miriam, you're on the call. Miriam can speak.
Yes, I'm on mute, Liz.
Thank you, Miriam, but I'm just going to speak for you if you don't mind, so you don't have to come off mute. Miriam and the implementation team, which includes Karen, is doing some work on the way in which a final appeal would be handled, because that would be inserted in the instructions to applicants about, well, you're going to go into this objection process, these are the rules, the decision is binding, there is either an appeals process or there isn't, because that is not fixed yet. So that will all be stated for applicants prior to the process actually beginning. And just before we break in, J. Scott, welcome, thank you for coming. We actually started without you, so
I'm sorry, I just had an
I No, no, I know you did. I got your note. Thank you. So we're just getting Victoria up to speed on what is actually the intention of the recommendation 20 and what's the work that actually needs to be done. And we've got to resolve the question around public comments and any other questions Victoria might have on the definitions of it. So, Victoria, are you okay with all of that?
That's great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It is very, very helpful. I mean, obviously, not having read some of the more detailed material that you've referred to, I mean, I can only speak pretty generally, but I think we're discussing this at a fairly general level of abstraction today anyway, right? So, I mean, I can certainly at this point tell you what the NCUC position is, which I'm sure won't come as any surprise to anybody. because I imagine that it's been aired already in the lead up to where we are today. But I think there are three basic issues that we have. Should I run over them or are you fully familiar?
Yep, go ahead.
No.
Great. Okay, so our real concern is, I mean, I'm sure this has been explained fully before, I mean, the real concern here is that, you know, the objection, by allowing the objections to be sort of without detailed criteria, particularly criteria focused on legality, you know, essentially we're moving towards a sort of standard where, you know, anyone who finds something offensive or it offends the sensitivities or there just isn't, you know, there's been an inability to reach a consensus, then that is a ground for vetoing an application. We would prefer to see that restricted to very narrow grounds: fraud, trademark, misuse, misrepresentation, unfair competition, or very defined criteria at least, because, you know, this requires basically that any applicant seeks the agreement of the world. And even in trademark law, I think we put this in our constituency statement, even in trademark law, you know, you can succeed over an opposition. So that's the first issue. The second is the established institutions criteria and that language, because, you know, certainly there's no precedent legally anywhere that, you know, the longer you've been in business, the more standing you have. Do you know what I mean? For example, in a business context, or we just don't see that there should be any establishment requirements. I mean, new entrants into markets, new entrants in markets, you know, in economic theory or anything else, have just as much standing legally as anybody else. And so I'm not really sure what that criteria means. I mean, I think it's probably put in there in a sense that, you know, it was probably designed to be helpful in the sense that, you know, just we don't want this to be a free-for-all to the public for anybody to just sort of, and it's trying to add structure. I'm not sure that is helpfully adding structure in a way that is helpful, and it's probably just discriminatory. And perhaps that needs to be thought about. And I think that the third point, of course, is the concern over creating language and community rights, which again have no precedent in law. And okay, while I can, you know, on a very general level, clearly ICANN is making new policy and breaking new ground on numerous issues all the time, the thing is the balancing act needs to be, you know, for example, you know, we're all familiar with how much work goes into sort of treaty negotiations and development of international trademark law or other systems of law. You know, there's usually a great deal of academic analysis and what have you, and so if those sort of new rights are going to be created, then some real thought and detail ought to be given to making sure there's, you know, all interests are balanced. And so they're the three concerns on a very, very general level.
This is Chuck. And let me comment first, and I would appreciate it if others would correct me if I'm wrong on this, but whereas in other recommendations where an objection may be filed, we've tried to tie it to international law, I don't think we can do that in this case. Am I wrong there?
Why not?
Well, what you just said, where's the law of established institutions?
At the same time, those of us on the committee have felt like this is still a valid area where objections could be filed.
I mean, I think there are two separate issues there, and I'm not sure that they're related to each other. I mean, just to clarify, I'm just saying that nowhere else in law do established institutions have precedent over new businesses or any other kind of institution. So that's unprecedented, and no one's giving me a rationale for it, and I'd be very open to hearing what it is.
Well, again, though, what I'm saying is that we're not tying this recommendation to established law.
What's the rationale for that?
Well, the rationale is very simple. Let me give you an example. What if somebody proposed the .maori top-level domain, which is an indigenous group from New Zealand, as I'm sure you know?
Maori.
Yes.
Yep.
And there was substantial opposition from the Maori community. Is that not something we should take into consideration?
Well, that's just as I said earlier. Community rights have no basis in law. I mean, maybe it is something that could be...
We're not trying to base it in law because we agree with you in that regard.
Okay, leaving that just that example to one side, because it's very easy for us in these discussions, I think, to come up with examples that, you know, and then, you know, working backwards that way, I'm not sure is necessarily helpful. I mean, clearly, I think, as I said, that's one of our issues. You know, there is support in the NCUC for giving protection to community rights, and so I'm not in any way disagreeing with that example that you're giving, because I think it's a good one.
Okay. Now, keep in mind that this particular recommendation relates to strings that are proposed to target a specific community, whatever that community might be.
Well, is it so limited?
Read it again. Our wording may not be perfect yet, but read it again.
I didn't realize the entire wording was limited by that last subclause at the end. In ICANN terminology, is that a sponsored? It's a sponsored.
Yes. Well, except we're not going to use that term anymore. But yeah, you heard Liz use the word sponsored. It's very similar to what has been called a sponsored TLD. Although in this particular case, a TLD application wouldn't necessarily have to have a sponsoring organization. They could still target a community whether they have a sponsoring organization or not. Am I correct on that? Anybody feel free to correct me if I'm stating
that.
Yes, Chuck,
it's exactly right.
So would .sex be targeting a specific community?
No.
Well, it depends on the application, does it not?
If the application stated that .sex was going to be a special domain that only pornographers or people who dealt in adult-oriented content could register in, that was a baseline. They don't have a sponsoring organization, but that's who's going to be able to register there. So
okay, so that's
if
an
you're Disney. Dot, right. Disney, you're not going to have Disney.sex.
Okay.
They're going to say no. Then if a group of 50 industry organizations for the adult entertainment industry said, we don't want .sex. We don't want to be forced there. We don't want... They could file objections that would then be considered.
Okay. Well, then I think that is very, very helpful. So basically what you're saying is, we're not using the word sponsors, but... let's just say these are targeted applications we're dealing with,
right.
And there are eligibility requirements for those.
Eligibility requirement, but in a target, the way it's always happened before is, as it did with .xxx, which was not a sponsored TLD. It was an open TLD that just said that they were going to market themselves to a certain segment of the world. Okay, and they put that in their application. That was their market differentiation. We're not going to be a .com. We're going to be a .xxx, and we're going to use the general understanding throughout the international community for what that stands for to market and create a segment on the online community where that segment can operate.
Well, I think this may be the way to this may be a very helpful way of us being able to reach an agreement. If we can firm up the language about that, then we may have less of an issue from an NCUC point of view.
Well, why don't we just
do it at the beginning
and say an application which targets a specific whatever.
Well, I think we'd want it to be a lot more precise than that. But I think this is, I mean, that's not, there's no need to draft on the fly necessarily, but I think let's just, if I could just talk around it a little bit further, but I just think that may be the way forward. That, you know, if these are intended to be effectively, if this is intended to effectively attack sponsored TLDs only or affect them, where there are eligibility requirements, and I'm thinking of things like .travel, is that a good example? I mean, when you really had to be part of a community, you had to be a travel agent, for example.
Well, yeah, I think that .travel is an example, so that it's specifically targeting the travel industry. So what this recommendation is suggesting is that if there's opposition from people in that targeted community, they could file an objection, and then a decision has to be made whether that's substantial or whatever, and that's where some of the subjectivity, well, we're going to try and minimize the subjectivity in those kind of decisions.
And I would say .Asia qualifies as well.
Sure. Yeah.
.Asia is an even bigger form because it says that you have to be, you know, you have to qualify. I couldn't register there as a citizen of the United States of North Carolina unless I have a business or domicile in an Asian country.
Now, another thing to keep in mind, and we lose focus on this because we obviously need to focus on the objection process, but we think there's another advantage to this kind of recommendation. It makes it very clear to applicants right up front that there is going to be a challenge process, and in this particular case, for applications that target a particular community, whatever term we want to use, so they know right up front that it's smart for them to make sure that they have good support from that community, or at least not opposition of any significance.
And so, I think also it helps, Chuck, in the sense that those groups that are dissatisfied with it and try to bring some sort of legal challenge against the applicant, it strengthens their case that ICANN had a procedure and that they placed an objection, and after reviewing the objection, it was decided that the objection was not significant enough to forego the denial of the application.
Right.
And I think that strengthens the applicant's case. Listen, you had a chance to complain, and once you did complain, and after objectively looking at it, your complaint was not legitimate enough to forestall the addition of the name into the root.
Can I just make a comment as well? I mean,
sure.
I mean, I think, I mean, on a practical level, I mean, this will, I mean, on one, just, you know, putting aside free speech issues or anything like that for a second, on a practical level, this has got to be a disaster, I mean, a nightmare, in the sense that, you know, in business, I mean, you know, in a particular industry, for example, let's take an industry example. So it is dot travel, right? Let's just leave the communities and perhaps the more contentious and sensitive ones to the side. If you look at something like dot travel, I mean, the nature of sort of business litigation and competition issues and what have you, I mean, of course, you know, people in business, of course, going to use the objection procedure to stop a competitor registering something they wish they'd thought of. You know, there's going to be an awful, awful large number of objections. And it's going to spurn, like, it'll be a whole industry. I would have said.
We're very aware of the fact that this one is probably the most difficult to word in a way and provide criteria for that avoids gaming and the kind of things you're talking about. At the same time, we think that there's also the chance of disaster if there isn't something like this in there. Because if communities, if some third party can just come in and target their community without any support from that community, imagine the disaster that would create after the fact.
Yeah, I accept that. No, I completely accept that. I mean, there is probably some need for it. I mean, as you say, I think it's particularly in terms of indigenous communities and particular localities and what have you. It's just a question of should business.
Yeah, and I don't know that we can really, you know, I mean, we obviously give some examples in the way the recommendation is worded right now, but in my opinion, and I stated this on the list, you probably didn't see it, I don't think those examples like economic sector or culture or language community were intended to be inclusive, but because I'm not sure we can predict, I'm sure we cannot predict all of the possible types of communities that could be impacted in something like this.
I mean, you know, arguably the more precise the recommendation is, you know, I mean, working by example is not necessarily the most ideal way.
Right.
Because it's so vague, you know, and it doesn't provide the transparency and the certainty. I mean, it might be better that there would be much more detail in the recommendation. And it sounds from what you're saying as though, you know, I mean, I suppose that, you know, it is quite useful to divide them up, and it's interesting to sort of look at it that way. And is there what is the position then in relation to dot travel? If you've got, you know, competitors, if all in that scenario, all competitors are going to try and complain, and is going, do you want to try and limit that?
On what grounds can they complain, Victoria?
Well, I mean, for example, so someone applies to register dot travel, or, you know, well, let's say someone, well, dot, God, widget, or whatever, right? all the other widgets, you know, or five, you know, it's a huge industry, you know, at least 10 other widgets makers complain, right? Basically, just on a competitive ground. You know,
dealing with, first of all, your .travel example, it's not allowed under Recommendation 2, which is things must not be confusingly similar to an existing top-level domain.
I'll put that aside.
Say it's .widget. There is nothing in the work that we've done on the establishment of standing that is any objective ground for, well, we didn't think of it first and we ought to object. That isn't a ground for objecting.
What are the grounds for objecting? That's what I'm missing. Where are they?
Wait a second. I've just received from Craig. I can step back a step back, so this is helpful for Jay Scott and for you, Victoria. We had a meeting in Marina Del Rey just prior to the San Juan meeting that really drilled right down into the depths of this stuff, which was looking at recommendation by recommendation. We looked at, for example, in Recommendation 2, which says things must not be confusingly similar. Grounds for objection were that the proposed thing was confusingly similar and that the proposed thing was confusingly similar to another application. We went through each and every one of the existing objections that said who could object, what was the rationale for the standing requirement, and what did it relate to in terms of the staff discussion point document. Now, the one that you're dealing with is, for example, we went through the reserved word, we went through to generally accepted legal norms, which has just been fixed, which was 6, and then we went down to recommendation 20, and this is actually not updated on the basis of the current discussion, which says the proposed string, the grounds for objection are the proposed string relates to a defined discrete community which is represented by an established institution. Hang on a second, I'm just going to cough, sorry. And the applicant does not have the support of that institution. The group that has standing is the established institution, like the World Health Organization, or Baxter Pharmaceuticals, because someone is trying to register one of their products. And then it says, the standing for objection is to prevail in the objections process. The challenger must be the established institution. Now, this work is not complete. We need to do much more thinking about tightening, as you've suggested, the guidelines for the implementation. What we're trying to do here, though, in this recommendation is to deal with the grounds for objection, and that doesn't lead us into a situation where we have objection on any ground because it's competitive and I want the string. That is not a ground for an objection. Grounds for objection is that I'm an established institution or I'm a cultural or language community sector, and that this particular applicant is holding themselves out to represent me and our community, and we don't think that that's actually the case.
Well, that's not what this recommendation says, because this comes back to we ought to add more language in here and be more precise in my view on this recommendation, because this is much wider than that. This says if there's substantial opposition to it from amongst significant established institutions of the economic sector. So my widget example means all the other widgets based on this, which is all we thought, that's what we've got in front of us right now, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, that's not what this says. This says all the other widget makers can complain.
If they're targeted.
No, they just don't, just because they don't like it.
No, if they are targeted.
No.
That's not correct.
Where's the tag? Okay, I'm looking at the language here. There is substantial
Look at the end of the sentence.
Okay, but they would be targeted because they're all widget makers.
Not in a generic application.
Okay. So, I'm sorry, I don't get it. I mean, it affects them. They are in an economic community or sector, right?
But they're not necessarily targeted by the applicant.
It's the same economic sector.
No, wait a second. What this is trying to do is to say that, and I've got my Nokia mobile phone in front of me, I want to apply for .Nokia, and I want to have all the other silly Nokia users that buy pieces of plastic black crap from Nokia, then I've claimed that I represent the Nokia sect.
Okay, fine. This is .bank all over again. We've had the .bank discussions up and down. .widget, the example of ., I mean, we can all give so many different examples, and they all sound a bit different when you give them. Dot My Dot Wizard example is exactly the same as the Dot Bank example.
Okay, well,
okay?
If Dot Bank registers, Bank of America is not going to be a legitimate complainer. But the top five lobbying organizations throughout the world and the World Bank complaining about the organization that's claiming to use Dot Bank is a far different matter.
Okay, well, this language doesn't do anything like that to my mind.
Well, let's work on the language.
I mean, we have broad-based consensus here based on this, based on our last call. It's the NCUC
yeah.
that has a problem, so you need to give us some language that you feel is comfortable with that we can consider.
Well, I'm not going to draft on the fly. I'm not going to do it without consulting.
I don't think anybody's asking you to do that. And I don't think you can because I think your constituency has to agree.
Absolutely, exactly. I gave you the three precise objections. I mean, I'm not sure where we're going to go with all this right now, but I mean, I've given you the three precise points, but I think that I do think just as a matter of drafting, this doesn't achieve the results that people think it's going to.
Well, let me tell you what our time frame is on this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The hope was, and it was an optimistic hope, that this small subgroup could come back with recommended language by the meeting on Friday. Whether or not that's achievable, especially since we're not going to be able to draft on the fly here, I don't think, is up for debate. But regardless of whether we can do it by this Friday, in very short order, and I would suggest, and Liz, correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, not later than the meeting next week, not this coming Friday, we're going to have to firm this one up, even if that means leaving the language the same or with some minor tweaks, if we can't come to consensus on some improved language. Like Jay Scott said, there is strong support for this recommendation. Most people are open to some improved wording of it, like we've talked about. But if we're not able to reach some sort of an agreement with everybody's support, then we will probably go with a strong consensus position with a minority statement from the NCUC.
Yeah, well, the NCUC feel very strongly indeed about this, but that might not even be the end of the matter. I can certainly go back immediately to the NCUC and we can talk about the language further and we can see if we can come back with a proposal, and I can imagine we can definitely do that probably within tomorrow, provided people are available. I can't promise that they are and can turn their attention to it, but I imagine we could work within that time frame and see where we get to. I think that's now thinking about it further, of course, I'm sorry I'm coming to this late, because I know that's of no help to you.
It's not your fault.
I'm sorry.
We understand that.
I really apologize. Part of the problem, obviously, with this is that the significant established institutions, you see, to my mind, and I'm afraid I'm a lawyer, so, I look at language in a particular way, which is not the way normal people probably would, but, in no way does that suggest they have to be representative organizations like the World Bank or lobbying organizations or trade representatives. That suggests that, certainly in European law, we use establishments to mean businesses. That's in trademark law and everything else, competition law. An establishment is like a business, or an undertaking we use as well. So that is not precise enough. If you are looking at sort of a higher level of abstraction rather than just ordinary businesses, so if the Bank of America really can't attack Dot Bank, but the World Bank can, then this language doesn't do it.
Yeah, and let's not spend time on that, because I think it sounds like you understand what's trying to be accomplished here.
Yep.
You have recognized some concerns, and if you can go back to your constituency and come up with some suggested language improvements, and then this subgroup can consider that, and then if we're comfortable enough as a whole, we can put it forward to the full committee on Friday, or that would be nice if we could do that. I suspect the most time we'll have is the following week, and I think the meeting will be on Thursday the following week.
Because I would have thought, and of course I can't speak without consulting the constituency, but
I
would have thought there really might be some room. I would have thought that there ought to be some room to agree with this myself.
Well, and we hope you're right. That's why we're doing this call. If we didn't think that, we wouldn't have formed this group.
Yeah, sure, of course.
This is Miriam. Can I ask a clarifying question? Again, I'm trying
Please
to help.
Please do.
Okay, I hope you can hear me. I'm trying to help make implementation as smooth as possible. So just to understand the intent of the people on this call, if, for example, I apply for .art, A-R-T, because I want to launch a registry as an art lover, could an individual museum or could an association of museums come forward and say, I don't think a private sector or NGO person, individual or small organization should be able to do that. Could that be encompassed by the current text?
The first question, Miriam, in my mind is the TLD.art targeting a particular community? Is it just targeting art lovers? Or is it targeting art museums?
Mm-hmm. And are there registration limitations at the second level?
So that's the eligibility thing.
If it's art lovers, anybody can register. Would that group fall under this objection? Would that proposal fall under or not?
No. Because they're
I don't think so.
They're not purporting to represent any particular community.
Okay. Now, the museum or the museum association might feel differently. They might feel like, you know, it's primarily going to be targeted or marketed to our constituents.
But the application is going to have to set that out, and if it doesn't set it out, we can't just assume that that's what they're going to do based on the word string.
So a smart applicant
would
say...
That would be a legitimate complaint. If it's set in the, if it's set out in the application that this is what we're setting up, this is what we're going to do, we're going to target art galleries and art museums throughout the world, then an association of art galleries or an association of art museums could say, we don't want that.
Right. Okay, so if smart applicant would in their application say, this is not targeted to XYZ, this is intended for any art lover anywhere in the world.
I think it sounds okay. I mean, obviously...
I'm trying to get a sense of where the group is on...
Yeah.
...should you turn to implementation.
The reality, though, is...
Developing criteria, et cetera.
The business reality is, though, that while that's wonderful, it's not as easy a sell as it is to have targeted applications to go to targeted people, to however big that group may be. .Asia is far more marketable than .corp, C-O-P, just for corporations throughout the world.
Yeah.
Because there, people have a buy-in to that. And there are restrictions. Someone in the United States can own a .Asia. So that's who we're aiming to help, are those communities that will be targeted, that they should be able to self-select somebody who comes forward. And, you know, the smart applicant is already going to have these people behind them.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I was going to jump in and say.
The smart applicant's done this before they ever got to ICANN.
Yep.
Because the reality is, even without this process, people are going to write the board, and it's going to get vetoed.
Okay.
We're just trying to educate the applicant and say, you better make sure...
Mm-hmm.
You got the backing of the people you're trying to represent because this exists.
Well, I'm not sure that should be imposed on people, quite frankly. I mean...
Oh, they don't have to do it, Victoria.
It's
not imposed, but they're going to know right up front that there is this possibility of complaint.
This is merely a recommendation to tell applicants, as I understand it, if you want to have the least possible problem, follow these recommendations. You don't have to. It's a recommendation.
But, you know, business doesn't always work like that. People often don't like change or innovation or anything they think that's going to threaten their business model. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, with the best will in the world, lots and lots of applicants would never be able to get everyone to agree.
Okay. I think we're going to try to keep this to an hour, which gives us only about at most 15 minutes more. So I want to change directions on this if nobody objects, because I think there are a couple other issues we need to talk about, and these may impact the wording of the recommendation, but certainly they may impact implementation too, and I think it would be good if we spent a few minutes on those things. The first one Liz mentioned is public comments and how they come into play here. I think even if that ends up being an implementation detail, I think that we need to understand how that's going to happen. If we have an expert panel that makes a decision on something like this, if there's no complaint filed, do public comments matter at all? If there is a complaint filed, should public comments be considered by the expert panel in addition to the complaint? I think there are questions that we need to get a handle on, the answers of, to fully proceed with this recommendation, especially as it's worded now where it says based on public comments. Now, sorry to complicate things on that, but I think this is an essential part of, especially the way it's worded right now.
Right. Well, this is Karen. Can I ask a question?
Sure, Karen.
On that? You know, there are public comments on every application.
Right.
So public comments are just a part of the process regardless. So what I'm not clear on, because public comments are mentioned specifically in this recommendation, is that, you know, whether it's people's intention that, you know, because this is a community-based type of objection, whether public comments have some special standing in regard to this type of objection or scenario that they wouldn't have in, you know, if there's an objection on some other grounds. So, you know, my question is are public comments mentioned specifically here in this context for a reason, or how is that?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Liz, but I don't think we delved down into the public comments issue that much until just recently.
No, that's right, Chuck.
And that's why I was one that raised this particular issue, because I think it is one that we need to answer your question, Karen, but I don't think that the committee has yet.
Mm-hmm.
There's the broader question, not restricted to Recommendation 20,
right,
but
right.
The whole package, in that how will public comments come into play? Is that something that only the board considers? And like Jay Scott said, maybe they veto something because of public comments, or is it, you know, and a very honest question we need to ask ourselves, if we're going to ask for public comments and they don't matter, why are we asking for them? So there's some logistical questions there that we need to think about in this whole thing and make sure that we can respond in a reasonable way.
Can I just speak to that?
Sure.
I mean, clearly I'm not reading this. I mean, that would need, I mean, it's a very, very good point that was just made. I mean, I understood, without having focused on that aspect, that there would be a formal procedure for opposition. This is an objection procedure, right? So I would
right.
assume there's a formal objection. I think public comments entirely inappropriate, because what my concern would be is that it leaves then the opportunity open to ICANN players, participants, staff, you know, we're mm-hmm. looking at transparency and objectivity and neutrality here to stitch together arguments from different kinds of public comments. I think it's entirely inappropriate.
And I understand the problem with that. Now, I'm gonna throw another question back at you, Victoria. And so should public comments come into play anywhere in this process?
Absolutely not. People feel strongly
and if not, why do we have public comment periods? Would you suggest that there be no public comment periods?
None. I think there should be people should have to file a formal objection.
Even individuals?
Yeah, come on. I mean, it can be,
no,
it can
I
be
was
form.
Asking your opinion, and
yeah.
you gave it, so that's fine.
It can be just a form, you know, it can be something very simple to do, you know, that you don't need to consult a lawyer or do anything like that for, or, you know, it's just like it could even be a sort of tick box form on the ICANN website. It doesn't need to be difficult, but, you know, if people can't be bothered to do that and to make a formal objection, then I think it's... And also, at the end of the day, you know, this is an objection procedure. You know, it should be formalized rather than just the idea of putting people's applications out for just throwaway sort of heckling and you know, that's inappropriate.
Got it. Now, what I'd like to hear from others on this same issue.
Miriam, I just want to clarify something. By objection process, at this point, the intent seems to be to set up a formal objection process. Think, for example, of the UDRP, not because of the substance, but just because you have somebody filing an objection, the other side has, say, 30 days, or sometimes less, I think, to respond. It's that kind of formality. So I just wanted to distinguish that from a more or a less formal sense of the word objection, which can mean, you know, filing a one-page statement or somehow indicating a concern by ticking a box.
From an implementation point of view, Miriam, how do you think that let's go back to the public comments. Do you agree with what Victoria said? Just your own personal opinion. I'm not asking you to speak for ICANN or anything. In terms of should the public comments not even, just public comments during the public comment forum, not come into play in terms of any of the objection processes?
Well, I don't have a personal opinion or a vote, unlike you, Chuck. So let me
I don't know that I do either. This is a tough one.
I know. You know, I think all the other processes have had public comments, and I you know, imagine that there are a number of instances where they've been helpful, and they also do seem to be part of the ICANN structure. So I think it goes more to your general question. When you framed it earlier, there's a specific question for this recommendation, then there's the more general question, which we're, I guess, getting into now. You know, I think the council should give very serious thought to the position of not encouraging public comments on aspects of the application.
And we certainly shouldn't say, based on public comments here, if they're not going to be considered.
Yeah, now there, I think your specific question is very interesting, because I believe this is the only recommendation that refers to public comments.
It is, yeah.
You know, I think that needs to be thought through by the council very carefully as to what is their intention here.
Now, Liz,
so that's the way you framed it as earlier as a specific question for this recommendation. Then, of course, there's a broader question.
Yeah, right. And the broader question, I think it'd be very helpful, Liz and Karen and Miriam, if you guys took that back within ICANN staff and talked about that, because people get very irritated when we have public comment periods and they're ignored. At the same time, you know, how do you really incorporate them? You know, Victoria makes some good points there. And so, but that's something we don't need to talk about here, but I think if you guys can look at the higher level question in that regard, it would help us in the next few weeks.
Well, I mean, I guess this is Jeff Scott. I am amazed that it's NCUC that is against the public comments, because having not been involved, but been involved in ICANN since its inception, I know that the reason that public comments are considered and the reason that those mechanisms are put in place, especially on something like this comment where you're worried about somebody affecting a very small, unsophisticated group of ethnic group or language community or something like that, is because it's a bottom-up organization that wants the stakeholders who are involved to be able to have involvement and comment and get their comments out there and affect the processes.
Do you know, I think that's a fundamental misunderstanding of our position, really. I mean, and what our concern is that this will be misused, really. I mean, my real concern about this entire recommendation is that this will be abused by incumbents to prevent, you know, to maintain the artificial scarcity that we still have, and to prevent the registration of anything that slightly bothers anybody who's already a player in the market. The NCUC already deals with, you know, is a structured, you know, in a way democratic kind of way for the public's concerns to be dealt with. You know, so I think that's a misapprehension of really where we're coming from.
And how would incumbents misuse this?
I don't see this.
Well, let's take the dot bank example, where I have one more question, which I'd really like to clarify about that, because, you know, I think this is what this whole recommendation really comes back to, quite frankly. Yes, there is the issue about, you know, local communities and languages and what have you, and the Maori, dot Maori is a good example of that, and that is a valid issue. And at the NCUC, I don't think... we're concerned about that and concerned to support some protection there. What I'm very concerned about is dot bank, okay? Because in your example, I'm not quite sure who is DotBank targeting?
Well, it depends on the application. If the application is supporting banks around the world, and there are, global banking organizations that are in opposition to it, is that a situation that we want to promote?
Well, when you say to me this, and I guess, I started with .widget, but it's exactly the same as .bank, okay? The thing is, it's very easy for Bank of America to get, the banker's organization or the banker's association to stop some bright, clever young entrepreneur from registering .bank, right? Now, nobody's got any more right to .bank than the person who came up with the idea of it. Do you know what I mean? So that's the very scenario that I think is...
Yeah, but I'm not sure I agree. I'm not sure I agree with that. If the little entrepreneur does that and is
but no one has
planning
to
support the banking institutions of the world and he doesn't have their support, should that happen?
Well, I don't think anyone on the internet thinks that someone who's registered .bank is claiming to represent the banks of the world.
Oh, no, no. Don't forget, we're talking. If the entrepreneur is not targeting the banking industry and banks of the world, it's a different scenario. But
what
if he's claiming to support, mm-hmm. provide services for those institutions,
well, that was
then
my question to you, wasn't it? When is it targeting? When will you tell me?
When
the
application.
Okay. I'm afraid if we're trying to deal with this at a policy level, that's not an acceptable answer. You need to be able to extrapolate one or the other. You need to be extrapolate that example. It's the defining example that everyone's used about this recommendation.
I personally think you're making it more complicated than it is. It's a fairly real issue for...
No, it is complicated. It's important, and it's complicated, and it has massive impacts on numerous businesses.
Yeah,
and I think, in this policy setting context, We ought to be able to extrapolate, what the possible application, who might be targeted under what system. If that's our example, let's own it and work it through.
Okay. All right. So you're gonna now. The other thing I think it's important for us to talk about is now. By the way, does anybody think we should leave in the based on public comments phrase there? So that nobody really thinks we should leave that in. Okay.
Chuck, it's Liz here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. Okay. I've tried to be taking notes whilst the call has been going on, and it's one of the things that I think needs to come out of this call is any amendment of the language, which will need to go back to the group on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Are you now going back to a drafting thing?
Well, because I'm trying to get some closure on the public comments issue in the wording the way it is right now, I haven't heard anybody supporting that phrase based on public comments.
So the text would then read, an application will be rejected if it is determined that there is substantial opposition to it from significant established institutions.
Which are targeted, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But what that means is then that takes out public comments from the evaluation process, and what it does is then sets up in an implementation context the way in which opposition would be framed. So it takes out public comments, and then it establishes for us a series of texts that said, if you wish to subject this application to an objection, this is how you would do it.
Right. And I think that's what Victoria said, and it can be very simple, a simple form.
Yep, exactly. Okay, got that. No problem.
Yeah, our wording on it will be rejected. I've seen a few comments on that. That we may be able to improve that. I don't think we have time to do that right now. Obviously, it's not a predetermined fact. It's got to be evaluated. So I guess I personally lean towards may be rejected.
Maybe. Yep.
Yeah. Rather than will be, because it sounds too strong to say will be. It sounds like it's automatic, and that was not the intent.
Yep.
There's going to be an evaluation process.
Chuck and the group, it's Liz here. I just had one other thing that I wanted to raise before the end of the call, which was Jay Scott's note, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, Jay Scott, but you said in a posting about that you sent to Milwaukee about abuses of the process, and you said, unfortunately, there's no way, in my opinion, to craft a recommendational mechanism that cannot be gamed or abused. The most practical way is to have a challenge process which is serious and charge fees. I just wondered, for the purposes of this small group, whether, if you wouldn't mind, if we just had a bit of a go-round on that as well, because that's another element. Public comments is one part of it. The drafting of the recommendation is one part of it, and the way in which the objection process is structured is another one.
It's okay with me.
I personally think if you're trying to solve Victoria's problem is that anybody can come along and gum up the system, then you've got to up the ante and make it something that somebody's got to pay for if they have a problem.
I'm not sure that I agree with that.
How do we recover our costs as an institution, Victoria? And it's very expensive to establish independent panels.
You know
how
what?
Do we,
it's such a good point. And that comes back to my general concern that we make this as well worded and don't create an industry. You know, where we get where ICANN is deluged with these things, right? Quite frankly, I mean, I just think we're so, you know, I certainly am not able to address that issue right now. I haven't looked at anything that's been proposed or anything, and I'm still dealing with the principal level, so I'm sure I can't be of any help.
Well, another thing in this regard that I think we need to spend a little bit of time on, and I'm not trying to skip over what you suggested there, Liz, but I think it's related, and that is the definitions that Avery suggested. They see, and again, they're at the, I think, the implementation level, but still something that I think we should consider. In my opinion, and I haven't spent a great deal of time on them, they seem to be on the right track. They may not be completely there yet, but they're on the right track. The only objection I had is I don't think we want a 10-year guideline on established institutions in the Internet world. That's an eternity. I think that something like 5 years is enough and still have an exception procedure. If you have 10 years, you're going to have an awful lot that will be in the exception procedure.
I'm conscious of the time, but I don't want to cut off the discussion. It seems to me that there's a couple of things that have come out, if the group are willing to just let me summarize quickly.
Go ahead.
First of all, dealing with the text of the application, the text of the recommendation, I'm sorry, it seems to me that we have two amendments. An application may be rejected if it is determined that there is substantial opposition to it from blah, blah, blah. Deleting based on public comments or otherwise, those five words need to come out. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think that's correct from my view. The other question I would raise in the wording of that, the way it's worded right now, it seems to, it could be thought of to limit it to the economic sector, to culture or language communities. Is that our intention? As I stated earlier, I didn't think it was, that those were more examples, but I could be wrong.
Oh, I'm sorry. I completely misunderstood. Sorry, could we just run that over again? I'm sorry, completely confused now.
I thought that what we were trying to do was deal with Victoria's issue with the public comment and objection, and that meant removing it from the recommendation. That was the first piece of it. The second piece of it was dealing with Chuck's concern, which was will was too strong a term and it should be substituted with may. The third piece of the concern was, Chuck, it seemed to me that you were looking for examples of economic sector or cultural language community.
No. What I'm saying is, and I don't think we're clear in this, is and I'm not sure what the committee's intent was. When I saw established institutions of the economic sector or cultural or language community, I didn't originally take that to mean those are the only established institutions that could file a complaint from those three categories, but that those three were examples. Now, I may be wrong on that, but it seems to me it's pretty hard for us to define in advance what possible types of communities, one that may not fit one of those categories, may have the same concern.
Chuck, I wonder if I could help with the drafting here and to
Please
be consistent
do.
Then with 3 and 6.
Okay.
And I wonder how this sits with you guys.
I'm sorry, I'm really not prepared to draft on the fly here, as I said earlier.
We're going to have to deal with something, Victoria, and I'm surprising to...
Yeah. Well, okay, well, I'm not going to be obviously agreeing to that, and I would like to have a look at anything and what have you, and I just don't agree with this process of, like, trying to round this call up in this way, quite frankly, because we haven't reached any kind of agreement.
We heard you on
except
that.
Except on public comments. And also, Chuck, what you just said about the examples is entirely contrary to what you said earlier, which is the basis of our whole conversation.
Let's not argue that now. Liz, go ahead.
Here's my suggestion for how we could perhaps deal with this. So I'm going to read something and then I'll see if it works. An application may be rejected if it is determined that there is substantial opposition to it. Full stop. Yep. Full stop. Then we could put something like we've got in recommendation 3 and 6, which says examples of opposition could be from established institutions of the economic sector to which an application is being targeted, or opposition from cultural or language communities to which the application is being targeted.
Now, I like the examples part, but you left out one key ingredient in the first sentence.
Yep.
And that is the targeted issue.
Okay.
Because then that leaves it wide open to anything.
Okay. Let's see if we can reinsert that. An application which addresses a targeted community may be rejected if it is determined that there is substantial opposition to it.
That's better in my mind. I would say
substantial opposition to it from the targeted community, period.
Well, but you need that conditional phrase in there. An application that targets a specific community may be rejected and so on. If there is substantial opposition to it.
If there is substantial opposition to it from the target.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
From the targeted community, meaning not anybody can.
Good point.
The targeted community can come forward.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Good point.
And then say, go into the next sentence that gives
examples
of where, who might object.
Victoria.
Guess what?
We're trying to come up with language that addresses the NCUC's concerns because the existing...
Okay, I'm not really comfortable to just do that on the fly. I'd like to actually have a look at it.
I haven't finished my sentence. What I'd like to do is to propose some alternate language to be distributed to the small group that are dealing with Recommendation 20 to try to improve it. And then on the basis of that, perhaps you could go back to the NCUC and say, does that satisfy what you're trying to do?
I would much prefer, as I suggested earlier in the call, that, I mean, it's us that have the issue at this stage, I think. I think everybody has said that there's a broad, you know, everybody's vaguely in consensus, except us. So I think it's much more appropriate that, as I offered earlier, that I go back to the constituency tomorrow and that we come back to you before you do any revision.
Well, we're supportive of that, but I think you should take back what the rest of us think is the
best
version of where we're at. Because otherwise we're going to have this iteration again.
Well, we'll have to do that anyway.
Actually, you won't.
Maybe not as many times.
And Victoria, frankly, the iteration that you won't have, because unfortunately there is a whole bunch of consensus fatigue, and we can stick with the proposed language. We can have the NCUC in the position of having to submit a minority report. What we're trying to do is to reach a position which we think is the best possible in terms of the recommendation that addresses your concerns, which has come up with in a consensus base.
I mean, I made a number of very detailed, put a number of pretty detailed concerns, and I think this recommendation needs a great deal of work on a drafting front. And so I just don't think in, like, 2 minutes at the end of this call we're going to be able to achieve anything.
Well, we're not trying to do that.
All we're trying to do is do this, and you can take it back to your constituency and come to us with what you think is...
Okay,
obviously.
Well, if you'd like to just email me with whatever you'd like to send back, I will forward it. But, I mean, I'm not in a position to agree anything now.
We're not asking you to do that.
So, I mean, I think what I'll do is I'll leave it to you, and if you want to forward it to me, I will incorporate it with my comments and report back to the constituency.
Excellent.
And we will come back to you tomorrow.
That'd be very good. Now,
guys, I'm sorry, I was taking notes and thinking and writing at the same time. Would you mind if I just read it again? And I'm writing this down so I can email it to you. An application may be rejected. No, an application that is targeted to a specific community may be rejected if it
if there is
substantial opposition to it
from that targeted community.
The targeted community.
I think you need to put in if it is determined.
I have a question, Ms. Miriam. Do you mean to drop the reference to significant established institution?
No, it's going to go in an examples bit, Miriam.
Okay,
so it could be any part of the targeted community raising the objection. It doesn't have to be...
No, that's going to be in a second sentence. We're just working on the first sentence.
All right, we're just working on the first sentence. Hang on.
Well, look, if you don't mind, I'll leave you to it, and I'll have a look at this when you forward it.
Okay,
thanks,
Victoria. I appreciate you filling in here.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for your help. Bye.
Okay, maybe it'd be helpful, Liz, if you can go on to the second sentence, and then we can come back to Miriam's concern if it still exists.
Well, I just want to make sure, did you put in that if it is determined language? Because that's important.
Wait a second. I'll go back again, J. Scott. An application that is targeted to a specific community may be rejected if it is determined that there is substantial opposition to it from the targeted community.
Yeah.
That's
voila. Examples, to get to Miriam's point, of that opposition may come from established institutions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of the cultural, economic sector, language community to which it is targeted or intended to support.
Just to be clear, I don't have a position on this, but just to realize that in the language that Liz just read, anybody from the targeted community can object.
Well, I mean, as Jeff, as I think Chuck was pointing out, that was his concern. Is his point was, I believe that the original recommendation was not to be limited to the three groups that are set forth in the recommendation.
Right.
And I think Miriam's talking about something different. Did we leave out the word substantial?
No, you left out, and I know there are problems with including this too. But I just want you all, I just want to have clear guidance from you. We all do. If you leave out, if significant established institution is no longer in the first sentence, then anybody, any member of the community, or three members of the community can object.
Yeah, I hear you.
I see you.
And that could be your intention. I just want you all to be clear.
I think actually we
should. It has nothing to do with releasing the limitation on economic language.
Gotcha. I understand. And I think you're probably right that, and I'm trying to think back to the committee work on this, and the established institutions and the word substantial were put in there for very specific reasons to try and avoid what you're talking about. So
They raised their own questions about what does that mean.
No, I understand, but again, Aubrey's taken a first crack at trying to deal with that from an implementation point of view. So I think that those could be put back in there. Jay Scott and Liz, what do you think?
Why don't we just put it, there's substantial opposition to it from
established institutions.
Significant established institutions
from
the targeted community.
Yep.
And I think you've done that. Then you've raised the bar. Isn't that what Miriam's concern is? We've lowered the bar.
Yeah. I don't have a position. Just be clear on which way you want
to. No. It's taken
no,
that
I
way.
Didn't think you were raising. I think you were raising a concern, not a position, or highlighting a ramification of
it's
our.
It's a good catch.
Precisely.
Okay.
So where are we at?
So what I'll do then is we've done a lot of helpful work for the NCUC who are no longer on the call.
Yeah, that's okay. But I think it would be good because if you read exactly what you're going to send them, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, and if you need a few minutes to do that,
because of the way that
Victoria was reacting, I think it's we don't want to be tweaking this after you send it to them.
Okay, I'll read it to you. An application that is targeted to a specific community may be rejected if it is determined that there is substantial opposition to it from significant established institutions within the targeted community.
Okay, and the next sentence.
What, within or representing? Just a question.
Sorry, Miriam, I didn't hear you.
Is it better, do y'all want to say within, or do you want to say representing?
Representing's tough, because...
Bit of a lobbyist, I guess.
I want to stick with within.
Okay. I just want to raise a question.
Within the targeted community.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, I'll read it one more time just for everyone. I'm sorry to be boring about it, but it's good to get it right. An application may be rejected... No, an application that is targeted to a specific community may be rejected if it is determined that there is substantial opposition to it from significant established institutions within the targeted community.
Period.
Okay,
period. Full stop.
And the next sentence? And this, the reason I'm pushing you to get that one, too, is because I think that's going to be another area where the NCUC is going to...
Well, I think, Chuck, that what we need to do is see if we can get that. Then we have to say how we would define significant, established, and targeted community.
No, forget that a moment. I want to hear the next sentence that talks about the examples.
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. You had proposed that earlier.
No, I just had said examples of that opposition may come from, and then da, 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 da.
Oh, so we wouldn't even have the sentence about examples of... that may be okay.
Because you've got significant established institutions from the targeted community. The targeted community
could be
a language community.
Yeah.
It could be a business community.
Yeah.
It could be an ethnic
good.
Community.
And that addresses the concern I had. So
yeah.
I'm okay with that. I was just making sure we had closure.
Because what it does is it says only certain applications will fall within the purview of this recommendation, right? Targeted applications.
Mm-hmm.
And they can only be opposed when there is substantial,
yep.
right, substantial problem with it from significant institution, or, you know, one or the other, established institutions. And we've put as much qualifying language to narrow this as we can.
Yep. Good. Okay. No, I like it.
I'm comfortable.
Yep.
Are there others on the call?
Karen, you have any thoughts?
No, I think with the moving the established institution part to the first sentence, I think that achieves what you want to intending.
Thanks. Okay.
I think that's what we send to them, and that's what we take to the meeting on Friday, provided that they don't come back to us between now and Friday with something that we can massage into this and feel comfortable with.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the meeting early Friday, so...
It's 8 East time to... Chuck, you're over here with me then, aren't you? On the
yeah, I'm at the moment on the East Coast, so I don't have to get up at 5.
guys, I just wanted to see if I could wrap that up and send it to the group.
You may.
I did for recommendation 6 was to send out the amended text to the small group.
Yeah.
And I'll do that. And then what I also said was if there was not substantial opposition, to it, then I would send it to the big group prior to the Friday meeting so that the group have it prior to the meeting.
Yeah, they probably won't have ours with much lead time because I'm sure it'll take the...
I think
with what you have, you could send that. I mean, Victoria can go ahead and send what you're going to send to us to the NCUC group. Yeah.
Yep, that's
no
right.
use delaying that.
No, okay. All right. And then what I'll do is I'll take Jay Scott's points about fees and leave aside the section of examples, and I'll remove the reference to public comments.
The fees don't have to be a profit source. They can just be covering something.
No, they're only cost recovery, Jay.
Yeah, but if they are, at least there is a fee, which means that somebody who wants to complain is going to have to be serious about it.
Now,
it's an economic pay. You have to put your flesh on the table.
Now, Karen and Liz and Miriam, from in your work on implementation, have you considered the question of whether or not there can be multiple complainants? And if so, are the fees different when there are multiple complainants? Is it the same? I don't necessarily need answers, but I think that's something that will have to be dealt with.
I have raised the question, and it's definitely on the list of answers that we need, but I don't think we have one for you yet, Chuck.
Yeah, and that's fine. I didn't necessarily expect you to, but I think it is one that needs to be answered, because you may have different significant institutions of a particular targeted community that don't complain together,
right.
Or a variety of scenarios. But you're ahead of me on that, which is what I expected, so that's good.
I think this is a good movement. It certainly has tightened up this from my point of view. I mean, it's not specifically illustrative of everything that we could think of, but we can't do that. Again, this is just, as I understand these recommendations, they are only for an applicant to be able to look at and say, here's the lay of the land, to help them in putting together their applications so maybe they don't step into any minefield.
And if they do step into a minefield, they're going to know what the consequences
are. That's right.
Yeah.
And I think this is far more guidance than earlier applicants got.
Yeah. It is. Yes.
So,
Liz, is there anything else we need to cover today? Oh, I think we're going to have to postpone discussion of the clarification of the terms that Aubrey did.
Actually, Chuck, I don't think that you are. I think that once you get this recommendation language right, the definitions that Avery has proposed and anyone else can propose definitions go straight into the implementation guidelines.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the implementation guidelines will be part of the final report that goes to the board, right? And that the council approves?
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, I'm going to dive off then.
Yeah, okay, guys.
I think we all are.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay, see you then. Bye.
Bye.